fellow wrong thinkers and persons and the band, you are watching a live episode of Kerfuffy Break on Deprogram with Carrie Smith. This is a relatively new channel, started this year in February, and we just hit 12,500 subscribers. I'm very excited. Thank you everyone who shared it. And if you're here for the first time, we hope that you stick around and you enjoy yourself, and feel free to interact in the chat. We do have locals if you like the show and want to support us financially. And we also have a Patreon Subscribestar. We've got a book club. We're working on picking the second book and should be announcing that soon. I know what I want it to be, but I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait and talk to people about it. And then I think that's the only announcements. I'm very excited about my guest today. So on Mondays and Fridays, do a live show and we just hang out and talk about what's going on in life and the world and try and make sense of things and have fun with each other. My guest today is someone who I've been lucky enough to be on her show now twice, but it's her first time here on Deprogrammed. Her name is Anne Pinkava. Damn it. Anne Pinkava. She's the co-host on Politically Incorrect Knitters, a podcast that features the latest news from the knitting wars, interviews with free-thinking crafters, and even the occasional handcraft scarf. Please welcome Anne, guys.
Hello.
I butchered your last name even after I practiced it.
You know, everybody does. Everybody does. Sometimes in my own mind, I mess it up.
So. You know, when I read your name, what I'm thinking of in my head is that scene from Anchorman where he says, San Diego. And I think, and Pinkava.
But that's right. One time somebody wrote a limerick with my name and I had to tell them that they pronounced it wrong and that their rhyme didn't work anymore. Pinkava. Not Pinkava. They had rhymed it with Java. I'm sorry. It
doesn't work.
So it's a beautiful limerick. I'm so sorry.
What heritage is your name? Because I never heard that name before.
It's Bohemian. So where would the Czech Republic would be now?
Okay.
Or like La Boheme, the famous opera that Rent is based on, where they all die for stupid reasons. It's like that Bohemian.
Like that Bohemian. And you are currently reporting from, I was going to say undisclosed location, but you said I could tell people you're reporting from Romania.
I am, yeah. So, all those good Balkan states.
What are you doing there?
I don't know. A good friend of mine, her sister lives here. And there came an opportunity and they're like, oh, they need someone in Romania. And my friend just sort of offered it to me, like, by the way, this is happening. I didn't think you'd be interested. I'm like, no, I want a very easy way to hang out in Eastern Europe. Yeah, I'll never get this opportunity again. Give me.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for taking the time to hang out with us today. So I know there's people in the chat, I see them already commenting, who are familiar with you and your channel, Politically Incorrect Knitters. But for anyone who's not a part of that knitting world, can you tell people a little bit about yourself and your channel?
Sure. Well, Politically Incorrect Knitters was started a year after the Ravelry ban of 2019, which is always interesting to tell people, because with any of the knitting war stuff, people still don't believe it. But basically what happened was Ravelry, which is the biggest knit, crochet, social media. It's really big on patterns. They also have forums. And if you want to, either like join a knitting community, or if you have questions on pattern, or if you want to be a part of a local knit group, a lot of people will direct you to Ravelry. So it's sort of the biggest website that way.
It is the big knitting site for anyone. Right. Right. Okay.
Right. And the owners are super woke, which is fairly obvious from the homepage. And there was a previous sort of political shakeup in Ravelry, but that had happened a decade before, so most people had forgot. But Ravelry thought it was a really great idea to trot out on their front page and say that any Trump support is unequivocal support for white supremacy. and that any Trump supporters were not welcome on their website, and that you weren't allowed to have any Trump patterns or talk about Trump in a positive way at all on their website.
This is, I just want to underline for anyone who's not familiar with this, because there are still people every day who I talk to who have not heard about these knitting wars, or they'll ask me, somebody asked me the other day, are the knitting wars real? And I was like, yeah, yes.
Are they?
Just think about this. This is the largest site where people come together for a craft, for a hobby group. And they're being told that if you supported this one political candidate, you're therefore a white supremacist, which is insane. And then right. when they did this, it became national news, and shows like the Colbert Report. I've played this clip on the channel before. We got we didn't get a strike, but they, some kind of copyright notice for playing it. But Colbert Report talked about this on his show, said, you know, they've banned all Trump supporters, anyone who supports Trump from this knitting site. And his whole audience erupted in applause. They thought that was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Liberals thought that was great, that censoring people.
Yeah, totally. And my first, I was actually on vacation at the time. I was, you know, that I had woke up and started to flip through Instagram, as we all do. And I saw all of these I support Ravelry posts. I'm like, huh, I wonder what this is about. And really felt like a slap in the face, honestly. And not, I mean, I'm not a particularly confrontational person, but no one has actively walked up to me and said, you specifically are a horrible person in that way. I mean, I've been a conservative, I've been a conservative my whole life. I kind of got the impression that some people weren't so happy with me. But still, it was never a direct you are evil. And they said in their statement, too, they're like, oh, this doesn't mean that all Republicans and conservatives are banned, just Trump supporters. That didn't take a week before they started deleting people. And as two sisters in the chat says, F Trump patterns were fine. Trump voodoo dolls were fine. Any sort of things. There's was one lady who had a pro-Hillary and a pro-Trump, like separate knitting patterns. Only the Trump one was deleted.
That's crazy. Yeah. She's not even picking a side. She's doing both, like two options, right?
Yeah, wow. Totally. Yeah. So they went through, there was many people who wrote comments and posts about this saying that, hey, I'm not even a Trump supporter and I think this is wrong. There's many people saying like, hey, moron, I'm not even white and you're banning, or sorry, I'm not. Yeah. And you're banning them. And all of these comments, all of them flushed out, all of them deleted. And also my co-host, Deplorable Knitter, that she, you can blame her for it, but she was sort of brought that on because the week before she had a Trump 2020 pattern. And other patterns she got in trouble for was build a wall, which was considered racist. And God is love with a rainbow, which was considered homophobic.
God is love.
God is love. Yep.
Wow. That one's crazy. I didn't know she did a build the wall one. Was that for, was the kit to knit a wall? Was it a wall knitting? No.
it was a hat. It was just okay. Like knit on it with the build the wall middle.
So they banned those. I've gotten to speak to the Deplorable Knitter, not just on your channel. I have interviewed her before. Her story's crazy, just with all the censorship, not just on Ravelry, but on Etsy and other places, Instagram. Right. And you guys are right at the, so you are two of the knitters who are right at the front of the social justice wars. So how did you decide to launch your channel, Politically Incorrect Knitters?
Well, I got into contact with Deplorable Knitter. I had followed all of this on Instagram and sort of kept up with the players and the stories, and I would post about it on there. But I had a hat pattern. It was for a Betsy Ross beanie. And
is that your puppy?
It is. Hey, Bella.
She'll it's okay.
But yeah, it's
Betsy Ross.
The Betsy Ross beanie, of course. But I don't know if you remember that Colin Kaepernick had said that he would not wear Nike shoes with the Betsy Ross flag on it because that was considered racist. No thought given to those slave children who made the shoes, but anyways, that the Betsy Ross flag was considered divisive. So I was ticked and, quickly whipped out a Betsy Ross hat pattern, and that had also gained a bit of popularity on Instagram. And there was a art exhibit that was planned in Massachusetts that it was a liberal lady putting it together, and with the term craftivism, that they had all of these very liberal crafting exhibits,
Did you say craftivism?
craftivism.
Oh, gross. I don't think I've ever heard that before. Okay.
There's a lot of it out there,
Okay.
and it's not all good. So craftivism, and then there's like quilts with the names put in of everyone who was killed by cops in the past year, and then there's this crocheted American flag with the Constitution behind it that the lady would come back and pull apart parts of it throughout the exhibit. Anyways, so they have all these very liberal crafting art things, and this lady contacted us. That she says that there's no conservative examples of craftivism, and would you be interested in putting together an exhibit? So that is how we got in contact, because we were going to put forward an exhibit, and COVID happened, and that exhibit was kaput. I would have hoped that it would have gone forward had COVID not happened, but it was interesting.
It's encouraging that they at least asked you, like, could you do a
Right. That is
conservative?
very kind of her to it.
Yeah.
Right.
I just wanted to highlight a couple of comments in the chat. Pirate Tomsky, hello. Say everybody say hello to our mod Pirate Tomsky. Said I knew that she would mess up your last name. Okay, pirate. And Adam Worrell just made me giggle because he said, check your privilege.
That's right.
CZECH, check your privilege.
Aha. I actually don't get that one that often, surprisingly.
Yeah, that one's pretty funny. So you and Deplorable Knitter got together, and what made you, why were you compelled to start talking about politics and knitting in the same show?
Right. Well, because everybody else was doing it.
The
That so as well
leftists.
as so Ravelry, everybody had to give their statement with Ravelry, are you a wrong thinker or not, basically, to say if you stood with Ravelry, if you didn't stand for Ravelry. And a year later, that is 2020 when we started. So we started the same week at or same week. We started the first week of June, and it was right after George Floyd's death. And it was right as the BLM riots started. So there's all of this building up in the knitting world too, but everybody in knitting had to post their black square in every sector and everything. Don't buy from the yarn shops who didn't. They must be evil. They must be called out. There were lists being created that these are the good businesses to shop from and these are the bad. And it had been going for a while, but this sort of percolated in all of it. So I mean, there had been, like I said, lots of social justice knitting wars, lots of people calling each other out, lots of people actively trying to destroy other people's businesses. And I know, for the non-knitters in the chat, this may seem like, oh yeah, whatever, knitting wars, but that knitting, that yarn and patterns and the rest of it, that there is a very small profit margin for all of this, because it's very difficult to get in. Your materials are very expensive, and the market is flooded because everybody wants to make a job off their hobby. And because of that, and also, let's be frank, there's a lot of women, and women destroy each other with words. They just do. And if
Wow,
you,
Anne,
yeah,
bringing the honesty. Yes.
seriously. And part of that is, okay, so I have yarn and they have yarn, and I want my yarn to succeed, and there's nothing better than cutting her out of the market.
A lot of it is, I think a lot of the social justice mobs are fueled by resentment, whether they're in knitting or not. But you often see that sort of there's that jealousy there, that resentment of this of that feeling of like, I want what that person has, why not me? And then social justice is just the ideology that's used. It's the weapon that's used to try and take that person down. If they're not, you know, if they say something problematic, even if they are a social justice person, like one of the big knitters that they went after, Sockmatician, Nathan, mm-hmm. who was on the left, who was, you know, probably I would say more squarely in that, in their world than he wasn't a conservative, you know, a gay HIV positive man who coined the diverse nitty hashtag. And then, but he stepped out of line in one small way, which was to call for kindness in the, mm-hmm. when these wars broke out, and then they're like off with his head, because then there's that opportunity to now use the ideology to tear down a successful person in the industry.
Right. And not to say that, you know, not to say it was all because he is a, his knitting is brilliant, mm-hmm. that he is very precise, and he does things that nobody else does when it comes to how it's constructed, that he does double knitting or triple knitting, or, and I know to a lot of non-knitters is like, I don't know what that is. Understand it's difficult how you carry yarn, how it's hidden within the fabric, so both sides are the good side. It's difficult, and it takes a lot of math and a lot of skill and a lot of creativity, and he does it and explains it and has books on it like nobody else. So if you're jealous, if you want to be the person invited to, because they have all these sorts of knitting events where he would come and he would teach. Mm-hmm. And that was his entire, that was all his job, that he would teach at these events and events would invite him and he would sell his books, and they just cut him out instantly. It was awful.
They confronted him at one of the events. I know he was physically accosted with someone at his book event, screaming at him. Just the craziest kind of things you can imagine if you're not in this world. Sometimes I talk to the Geeks and Gamers guys, the Friday Night Tights guys. This past Friday I was on with those guys, and they've seen social justice in those worlds, but sometimes their audience is familiar with it, like in the gaming or the entertainment space, mm-hmm. but they hear the knitting space and they're like, that's crazy. And you're like, yeah, it actually is crazy. Like they right. really went after people, went after their entire livelihood, like showed up at their conventions where they're there to promote their work. And
yeah, not only that, but there was a lady who acted as Sockmatician's assistant. It was unofficial. I don't believe she was paid for it, but booked him a sketchy hotel room the night before, like, or a sketchy Airbnb. So it was like a place where he physically felt unsafe. And then he went to this event and went, oh, well, I guess it's just a fluke. And then publicly confronted. And yeah, and afterwards he was actually on suicide watch. And it was the things of, oh, hope he dies, which is shocking in itself, or the, oh, well, he's faking it.
Yeah. Zero and compassion. Yeah. Well, so I do want to get into some topics today, and I know you sent me a couple of things we could talk about, but is there anything else that you want to say about your channel and the stuff that you and Deplorable Knitter do? I know that there's a couple of knitters in the chat who are already familiar. Blocked Magazine is here. Hello, Neil. He says, yeah, Nathan was accosted by Almas, a witchcrafty lady. Blocked Magazine has all the receipts, guys. If you ever need to know any of the details, go look him up. But is there anything else that you want to say about your channel? And I put the link down below in the description. People can find Politically Incorrect Knitters. But
yeah, sure. But yeah, our channel, we talk about the news and knitting, and we try to promote other wrong-thinking crafters as much as we can, that we've had different people on who have been canceled and have interviews with them. And our new show, which you were on this past Tuesday, that we're doing a live show every other Tuesday for the moment, because my schedule's kind of messed up with being out of the country. Mm-hmm. So, but it's called Live from the Knitting Wars. Yeah, we get, you know, last week it was, But this last week, Carrie was on, Neil from Blocked Magazine, Tabitha from Murder Knits, who is another gal who has all the receipts all the time. I don't know how she does it, but we'll, Every
gotta
once
have
in a while, I'll be like, "Oh,
Tabitha.
have you heard about this?" And she's like, quoting to me about their ex-husband. I'm like, "I didn't know this stuff."
Oh, that's
But
because
she
she's
did.
a true crime girl. She's got that
Right.
filing cabinet brain.
Right. So, yeah. And Tina from A Wended Yarn and Fibers was on with, that Carrie has a yarn and Mikey has a yarn and Billboard Chris and the rest of them. So that's fun. And Deplorable Knitter, of course. I think
I have
that's.
to say, your live show, for anyone interested, it was so much fun. It was just like sort of like how Friday Night Tights is just hanging out at the end of the week and having fun, and you feel like I watch that show even when I'm not on it. It's like it feels like you're just hanging out with friends. Your show has that feeling. Like you could put it on in the background, and it's that kind of show where it's like, oh, I'm just hanging out with some friends, and everybody's working on their knitting projects, and just you forget you're even doing a show at some point because you're just kind of talking about music or whatever. That was really fun. So thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I admit I might have stolen the idea because I have seen you on Friday Night Tights and now watch independently when you're not on there. But anyways, tossing around the idea of, you know what? There are no original ideas in the world. Let's just do it. Nobody else in the knitting world does this. Why not? Let's just have a good time and hang out.
Why didn't you call it Friday Night Knits?
Well, there was a lot of different names. But there was. Yeah, lots of different ideas, but we didn't want to be too close. And Knitting Wars is recognizable that people, if anyone's heard of anything, they've heard of Knitting Wars.
Oh, I didn't know this. BS has a weekly knit night called Stitchin' Bitch. Hi, BS.
I didn't know that.
That's a great name too. Okay. So, I sent you a couple things and I wanted to get into today, and you guys, thanks for hanging out and bearing with us. I'm a little tired today, but I'm picking it up. I told Anne last night I was messaging her about the show, and she's like, "Hey, isn't it 2 a.m. where you are? It's kind of late." I'm like, "I know, I couldn't." This morning I responded. I said, "Yeah, I couldn't fall asleep." But what I end up doing is I put myself to sleep by looking for things for the house that we need. So I was on some forum looking at vintage light switch covers. This is like the stuff you do in your 40s. I'm like, oh, that's a good one. Save for later. Save. And then I finally fell asleep, like looking at all these old, I guess you call them plug plate covers and the, yeah. Anyway.
Right. And I had to admit that Instagram found me when they're like, "Hey, do you like really elaborate floral door hinges?" And I'm like, "Yes!
How did you know?
Finally, some good content."
Yeah, my problem is I really do want to have my own antique shop someday because I want to buy more than I need usually. And then if you find a good deal on something, and I'm like, I was looking at all these light switch covers and I did not buy all of them. I just bookmarked a lot of them. There are some crazy fun old, not just, I was looking for the old brass ones, kind of like you said, floral and but I found all these ones from like the 60s and 50s, like old Mickey Mouse Club ones and other just forgotten, weird, kind of strange cartoon character ones. And I'm like, somebody needs to collect these and give them a loving home and sell them, right? Like put them in one place. Here's your selection. But
Okay, not to derail, but have you
yeah.
heard of People Houses?
Of
That they're
what?
an Instagram page, but HGTV sort of picked them up.
What are they called?
Cheap Old Houses.
No.
So, speaking of finally some good content, but it's this hipster couple and they go out and they find like old, sometimes Victorian, sometimes 1950s, sometimes 70s, that I think their limit is like under $350,000, but it's mostly much less, where they go and they find these houses on the market and they point out all of the cool vintage fixtures the houses have, and they suggest ways that you could redo this house, but it's very much a redo because you love the antique looks and not
Oh,
because
yeah.
you just want to whitewash everything. Like,
Oh,
I think
that's
the.
right up my alley. They're doing a show with them now.
Yeah, I think it's on Discovery Plus, but yeah, it's
I
called Cheap
need,
Old Houses.
we should get one of those TV channels over here. This is a cheap old house.
Exactly. But it's one of those shows where they'll walk in and it is a 1950s pink bathroom with pearl
Oh,
plastic tiles, and they're everywhere and they're
love
perfect.
it.
And
I
it's like,
love it. There's
I
a
know.
there is an Instagram account I follow called Vintage Bathroom Love. And that's really kind of the 1940s, 1950s bathroom tiles. And that account is just amazing. But okay. I'm gonna keep
Sorry.
going. No, I can talk about this with you more. Who cares?
Well, no, I'm sorry, because no, I was my favorite magazine for years was English Home Magazine, and it was so cool. And they'd be like, "Oh yeah, there's this cottage," or "Oh no, this is just my family house. It's been in the family for 400 years, but it's nothing much." And those sort of stories was in English Home Magazine, and I just ate that whole thing up. But I've noticed now that Country Living is now becoming English Home Magazine. They're like, "Oh, do you like white plastered walls and exposed wood beams with your fireplace? William Morris wallpaper has become cool now." I'm like, "I'm coming into my own,
Oh
finally."
wow. Finally. I know that other people will understand this. Maybe not everyone watching, but other people understand it, and I think you do too. I just love old things. I do. And there's nothing better than going to an old antique shop. I'm not talking about the high-end antique shop where they've redone everything and they've got crazy price tags on it. I mean what might more accurately be called a junk shop, or like a shop where they just collect old things, and the prices are good. They're maybe not in the best condition, but you come in and you don't know what you're going to find. And it's like all of these places need a loving home. Everything here needs a loving home.
I get that totally because I remember we were driving through the Black Hills and I'm like, "Oh, cool, it's an antique store." I'm like, it was like a something stupid. It was like a Goose salt and pepper shaker, and they were $25 for the pair. And I'm like, "What is this gouging?"
Yeah, what is this gouging?
Sir,
No way. Maybe
this is some
250.
hot garbage, and I expect to not pay more than 750.
Yeah.
But
That's
yeah,
the other
oh,
thing
I
is
love
they'll
my
usually let
favorite.
you barter. Yeah.
Yeah,
Or kind of not barter, but bring them down a little, you know.
my favorite antique store back at home went out of business, and I was just so disappointed. You could get knockoff black and or sorry, blue and white like Dutch porcelain figurines for a dollar a piece there. It was amazing.
That's the worst. We had some of that happen in Georgetown, Texas, because the it's becoming it, it's making all these lists, like one of the top places to live in the US, which is I'm kind of like I hope it stops being included on those lists because there's too many people moving there. But a lot of
Right.
those little mom and pop shops went under, and there was a great antique shop like that in Georgetown that unfortunately went under, and now there's like a trendy place instead. But
Yeah.
okay. We're going to talk about something that's actually in the news, guys. I promise. I'm here with Anne. It's
This is
natural that we would talk about knitting and then antiques. So,
I love it. No. Quick,
okay.
you have to talk about the news, or else I'll have to curse the people who cut up old books for craft projects. We're going to get there soon. Ugh.
Oh, I could talk about that with you too. Let's see. Okay. Can you guys see this article? Can you see that, Anne?
Can.
Okay, so this is a pretty long, in-depth piece. This is in the City Journal from Heather McDonald. You guys might remember her. She's the one that wrote the book "The War on Cops," and the author who's faced a lot of protests whenever she goes to speak at colleges. They try to call her racist and all kinds of other things. She wrote this really in-depth piece over the weekend. It's called The Corruption of Medicine, and I'm going to try to make it a little bit larger. And this is kind of terrifying. I mean, it's an excellent piece, and it's things
I
that
should
if you
have
watch
more.
this show, you're probably already aware that things like this are happening. But just to see it kind of documented all in one place, it's a little frightening. I'm going to give you the short version of what she's talking about here, and then we can read through some of it. So essentially, she's going through and talking about this trend that's happening at medical schools where they're now bringing in a lot of the social justice ideology into the field, or they have been for a while. and they're including all of these diversity, inclusion, equity courses among the actual medical training. And
yeah, they're giving course credit for it. It's not just a, you know, like, we'll like you better if you do this. No, it's actually accredited social justice.
Accredited social justice classes that have nothing to do with medicine. That's basically just ideology, not education. And they're also now attacking a lot of the tests and the different ways of measuring someone's proficiency in the field. They're saying that because there are differences, that they can notice some racial disparity in some of the test scores and some of the admissions rates, that just like they always do within social justice, they don't actually look to see, they don't use science to say what might be causing this racial disparity. They just automatically say it must be racism. It must be systemic racism. Therefore, let's get rid of the tests. They're talking about getting rid of the MCAT. They're talking about, with admission rates, admitting people who are scoring below average into some of these prestigious medical schools. And this has consequences that just, they're vast and they're unknown on people's health. To be playing around with social justice pseudoscience in the medical field and promoting people and graduating people who haven't shown proficiency at what they're doing. It's like, I just think this is one of the scariest things I've read in a while.
It is. Sorry, I'll let you start reading.
Okay. Do you want to read some of it? I'll let you.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm glad, because the font is actually better here than it was when I was reading it before. It was sort of like weird and lacy on my computer. Anyways. So the post George Floyd racial reckoning has hit the field of medicine like an earthquake. Oh, hi. 1 second.
Is that your puppy?
Bella wants to read too.
Okay.
Well, it's not my puppy, but it's the puppy that's here. Aw, she's very cute. It's lightning outside, so she's a little freaked out.
Here, I'll read this first part, and then I'll turn some of it over to you. Okay. Well, you pet Bella. Okay, the post-George Floyd racial reckoning has hit the field of medicine like an earthquake. Medical education, medical research, and standards of competence have been upended by two related hypotheses: that systemic racism is responsible both for racial disparities in the demographics of the medical profession and for racial disparities in health outcomes. Questioning these hypotheses is professionally suicidal. Vast sums of public and private research funding are being redirected from basic science to political projects aimed at dismantling white supremacy. The result will be declining quality of medical care and a curtailment of scientific progress. Virtually every major medical organization, from the American Medical Association, the AMA, and the American Association of Medical Colleges, the AAMC, to the American Association of Pediatrics, has embraced the idea that medicine is an inequity-producing enterprise. So they're saying that medicine itself produces inequity.
Right. Which, with so many of these different, you know, fields of sciences where social justice has been put into them, that it's like it's the fact that it's racist in itself. It's like, oh, well, your science, shouldn't you find out the core causes? No, racism is the cause. We can't look farther.
Yeah, it's anti-science. It's anti-science to start from the conclusion and say it must be sexism, it must be racism, and then work backwards and try and prove that. That's not science. The AMA's 2021 organizational strategic plan to embed racial justice and advance health equity. That's the name of the plan. This isn't a description that she's using. It was called the AMA's 2021 organizational strategic plan to embed racial justice and advance health equity. That's the name of their plan. It's virtually indistinguishable from a Black Studies Department's mission statement. The plan's anonymous authors seem aware of how radically its rhetoric differs from medicine's traditional concerns. The preamble notes that, quote, just as the general parlance of a business document varies from that of a physics document, so too is the case for an equity document, end quote. Such shaky command of usage and grammar characterizes the entire 86-page tome making the preamble's boast that, quote, the field of equity has developed a parlance which conveys both authenticity, precision, and meaning, particularly ironic.
Just go ahead. To ask, so have you ever sat down and read like racial equity studies? I mean, you went to college, so I know that was part of your training.
It's social justice training. It's been a while, but yes, whenever there's something where they're making a claim and you want to go back and see, well, what do the actual studies say? Yes, I've sat down and parsed some of them just to find out, like, is this study support what they say it does?
Right. I sort of an odd story that I helped a lady who her parents had been or her in-laws had been professors at the local college, and one of them was sociology, and they were both Black, and they were very much into this racial equality, or not racial equality, but it was very, I forget because it's an older term for it, but the CRT, critical race theory, the rest of it, but they were kind of in on it in the beginning. And I was helping this lady sort of, clean out her basement, and there was all these boxes full of paperwork. And I just remember, and, I'm boxing it up, I'm moving it and everything, and I just flip it open, and the papers, it's basically, these are the horrible racist things that white people think about you. And I'm just shocked. I'm sitting there and I'm, reviled reading through this. Like, I can't believe, I mean, this is the most horrible stuff, but also you're handing this to people and saying, hey, these people think this about you. And it was very much a racial division from the outset kind of a thing. Yeah. And yeah, anyways, but to purposefully implement that in another field, in medicine, of pitting people against each other
just indoctrinating people and telling them this is the way the world works, not based on evidence,
right?
Based on a system of belief. And I've known this is happening. I mean, we know this has been happening for a while on this channel. It's just, again, Heather McDonald's. I'm not going to read the whole thing because this is a very long piece. I'll put the link in the chat. But she's just kind of put it all together in one place so that you can point to it here. I'm dropping it in the chat right now. I'm just going to read a little bit more, and then we can talk some more about it, and then we'll jump out. But we're going to get to some of the very concerning parts. So here, we're still in the opening where she's talking about what's happening in the medical schools now. So she says, thus forewarned, the reader plunges into a thicket of social justice maxims. Physicians must, this is what they're teaching med students, physicians must, quote, confront inequities and dismantle white supremacy, racism, and other forms of exclusion and structured oppression, as well as embed racial justice and advance equity within and across all aspects of health systems. What does this have to do with treating people's health? Why is this the emphasis being placed on this for doctors? The country needs to pivot from, quote, euphemisms to explicit conversations about power. There it is, power. That's at the center of their ideology. Every time, power, racism, gender, and class oppression, forms of discrimination and exclusion. We need to discard America's stronghold of false notions of hierarchy of value based on gender, skin color, religion, ability, and country of origin, as well as other forms of privilege. This is all social justice gobbledygook that they're pumping into the heads of med students.
Right. And it's something that we talked a bit before we interviewed you on our channel about the meanings of words and how they change all the time and how it's important to keep the meanings of words. Here, I'm moving this dog. But what they're saying that there is white supremacy in the system, so we have to dismantle that white supremacy. Well, the thing is that They use very general terms, but what is specifically the white supremacy in the system? And we haven't got there yet, but the white supremacy is test scores.
Yes, that's what they're arriving at.
Right, and like, first off, that is racist. Like, this is every all of this is so racist and awful. But it's the what is the evil that we have to dismantle? What is the disparity that we have to dismantle? Like, oh, it's not actual discrimination. It's test scores. It's competency. It's not whoever is competent can succeed. It's we have to change the standards of competency for others because we don't think that other people can succeed.
Yes. In the chat, Solar Unicorn just made me giggle and sighed. Come and see the whiteness inherent in the system. It sounds like a circus.
This thing there, kind of quoting Monty Python as they're beating you up.
This one is a serious comment. Won't make me laugh. It's true. Pirate Tomsky says what they're ultimately talking about is dismantling the systems of the West. Yes, that's exactly what they're talking about. Getting rid of any standard of measurement whatsoever. Can you imagine? It's like going into your doctor when you're looking for a brain surgeon. Do you want the best or do you want, don't worry, they don't, well, they didn't exactly pass their tests about brain surgery, but because that would have been racist to make them take tests, and we've gotten rid of all those tests, so we don't really know. But you should know that this person is a woman and black and also lesbian, and you know, it would be really great if you have them as your surgeon. What? Like, I don't care about any of that stuff.
And I'm just sitting here, horrible person. I am just like, they're still Jewish though, right? Because I want no, but he was like, if you're sick, you know, the stereotypical, like, give me the Jewish doctor. But
Oh, it
no,
took me a second. Comedy.
that's
Who
not the
do
first thing you actually think of. It's a
you
bad joke.
And you should know
Right?
sometimes jokes go over my
But no,
head,
it's
so.
a well, I bring the bad ones. But no, it's the, you know, stereotypical, you know, who's a doctor that you trust, but it's really the who has a record of competency. That's what you want. There you go. But yeah, that it's, you know, like, I feel really great that they passed their diversity training, except for, you know, the ghostly pale among us. I'm a little worried about the diversity training. If your diversity training just said that I'm a horrible person and worth less care than another person, then I might be concerned. I
Yeah.
kind of think that all persons be equal, and therefore we all have an equal right to care, or not right to care, but you know, to be served by a hospital.
Yeah. Nerdy girl says, let's just say I work adjacent to this field and I have a lot of interesting stories. I bet you do. I hope there are a lot more people who start coming out and leaking these stories. So again, this is a long article. If you just joined us, we're reading parts of Heather McDonald's article in the City Journal about social justice in the medical field and how they are now trying to get rid of tests and any measurement of proficiency in the field because they say it's all systemically racist. So if you scroll down a little bit, we're at the part of the piece where she's talking about how it is. How they're telling doctors, teaching doctors that they have to confront inequities and dismantle white supremacy as a doctor. And
As
the way that they do this, a key solution to this alleged oppression is identity-based preferences throughout the medical profession. The AMA strategic plan calls for the quote, just representation of Black, Indigenous, and Latinx people in the medical school admissions, as well as leadership ranks. The lack of quote, just representation. Again,
so
talking about,
arbitrary.
yeah, it's arbitrary. How, what is, they don't define these words. What do you mean by just representation? And I'll go back to this. I know we've talked about this before, but they want to pretend like unless there's an exact percentage, you know, if, unless you replicate the percentage, the racial percentage or the gender percentage in the population at large in the field that they're talking about, well, then there must be racism and sexism. They never prove that. They never prove what the reasons are. They just assume that, and they don't apply it across the board. They're hypocrites. They don't look at something like ditch digging which is like 99.9% male, and
Right.
say, why aren't there more women in it? Why isn't there just representation of women in it? It must be sexism. They don't do that. They're not concerned with going in and destroying ditch digging and making sure that we
And
have
if they
50%
did, we'd
women.
have a lot less ditches, and we need
Yeah.
those.
Yeah, we do. But they're going to do it in these prestigious fields like medicine. And I would argue that's just as dangerous as going in and playing God when it comes to ditch digging, because now you're putting people in here who are not the best, who are not the best doctors. Guys, this
Harvard
really,
isn't best their best.
no, this really burns me up. Well, Harvard admitted David Hogg. I mean, that's all you need to know.
Man whose wrists are the same circumference as his forearms.
I didn't know that about him.
Oh,
But
sorry. He's
that's
not that
funny.
that means anything in his potential ability to be a brilliant young man, but.
True. Okay, I'm going to scroll down a little bit more. Okay, according to medical and STEM leaders, to be white is to be per se racist. Apologies and reparations for the offending trait are now de rigueur. I can never say that. In June of 2020, Nature identified itself as one of the culpably, quote, white institutions that is responsible for bias in research and scholarship. Nature magazine said that. That Nature magazine came out and they did the whole I have white privilege thing that individuals do. The magazine, the science magazine Nature, came out and said, we have white privilege, guys. We're here to
We are
contest.
unworthy.
Yeah.
Gosh, I miss Trump with the whole, our colleges are racist. He's like, well, we should stop funding these racist colleges. And they're like, oh,
Yeah. Hey, that's the best response. If Nature magazine is like, hey guys, we'd like to confess our white privilege. It's like, I guess I'm unsubscribing. Didn't know you were such a racist, Nature.
like, wow, I can't be seen subscribing to this racist magazine. And to think, I've been reading it for however so long. I
Yeah.
didn't pick up on it, but I guess I'm wrong.
In January of 2020, the editor-in-chief of Health Affairs lamented that, quote, our own staff and leadership are overwhelmingly white. Dude, the population of the United States is overwhelmingly white. So what by what standard are you even that doesn't even make any sense. That's like going to Japan and saying most of the people on the television are Japanese. It's like, well, yeah, you're in
Sorry.
Japan. Like,
A little Asian up in here, and I'm kind of concerned. Like, you're in Asia.
yeah, this is just it's getting crazy. So I'm gonna skip down quite a bit now, Anne.
Okay.
You mentioned before we started, because I sent this to you, what was the thing you were talking about that was one of the most concerning things to you?
Here, I wrote it down, but as you can tell, it's getting late here. It's almost 9 o'clock and it's kind of rainy anyway, so my light is dying. But I wrote out a quote that, okay, the MCAT, which is the medical entrance, medical college admissions test, that they actually took out the questions where the largest racial difference was in whether or not you got it right or wrong, which is also concerning to me because that means that you don't just hand in your tests and you get your questions right or wrong and you get it back, that they're tracking which questions you get right or wrong based on your race. And that if too many of a certain group of people with a certain race get the question wrong, then they're like, oh, well, we don't need this question. It's like, well, what if it's an important question? I
Yeah.
mean,
They
these are all medical questions. These aren't, you know.
are changing the MCAT to remove, as you just said, remove questions if they are deemed culturally biased. But again, they don't offer evidence that they're culturally biased. They are basing it solely on whether there's racial disparity in who got the question right or wrong, but they're not proving where that comes from, whether there's a bias there or not. They're not saying, they're not offering evidence that this question is inherently a racist question or a biased question. I have a little bit of experience with this in the real world. One of the first jobs I had outside of school was I taught SAT prep classes. Like I taught 11th graders how to get their SAT scores up. So I taught for the Princeton Review and would go to different high schools and do these classes. And social justice had just, I of course became indoctrinated into it at Duke. But it was just starting to infiltrate that field as well. Like it's probably much worse now. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I remember we didn't have a whole course or anything, the Princeton Review teachers on DEI, on diverse inclusion equity, but we did have a little section where they talked about culturally biased questions, and they gave us examples about how, you know, it was sort of presented as if we don't even know if the SAT should be something that is used because it's kind of racist, guys. Like that's the way they presented it. And they gave an example where I remember where they said, for example, if there is a question about snow, like maybe a math problem that's, you know, this many inches of snow, if this many inches of snow, da 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 da, this many inches of snow. And they said children who have never grown up around snow wouldn't have the cultural language to be able to understand this question. I'm like, I don't think that's true. I think that a child who grows up in Florida who hasn't seen snow still knows what it is. And it's not right. even relevant to, it's just a.
It's, yeah, it's not relevant to their race either. Exactly. If they grew up in Florida.
Yeah. But that was the way they were. Surly unicorn, snow disadvantaged.
Just like the little kid in The King and I believe in snow.
Right. Marvy Dog says, a culturally biased question would be, are you an ally? Yes. You guys are making me laugh in the chat. Jules says, I've never seen a tornado, but I still understand the F scale. Okay. Yeah, it's true that it really snows in Florida, Wikipedia. However, if you're asking a math problem where that's just the entryway into the question, it's just a part of the setup. It has nothing to do with needing to know what snow is like, then it's not biased. So anyway, I just remember that was the example they were giving. So they're saying that some of the questions are culturally biased. And so they're just going to remove them. But eventually what they want to do is get rid of, you know, Heather McDonald's making the case that they want to get rid of the MCAT altogether. They want to get rid of this. And at some of these medical schools, they are now, they're not requiring the students to take exams anymore. That may have been the craziest thing.
I know.
That I read.
Yeah. And that it's like, oh, well, you don't need as many medical lessons when you can just have accredited social justice. I would hate for your time to have to be filled with, you know, having to know different functions of the body. You had to be a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see if I can find that part about, okay. I think this might be it. let's see.
Oh yeah. That,
the part where they talked about, the classes, again, this is a very long piece.
Right.
They talked about the classes and they talked about the grading scale.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you just scrolled by a little. Oh, sorry. Not that bit specifically, but a young man who was the top of all his classes and research and very promising, but he was a clean cut white Catholic. So he's out. Barely got an interview. He got into one medical school when he should have been top of all of them.
Yeah. Well, let me skip back just a little bit. So here's part of what they view as a problem. And this is the admissions gap and how it relates to race. So it says, despite the allegations of faculty racism, disparities in academic performance are the predictable outcome of admissions preferences. In 2021, the average score for white applicants on the medical college admissions test was in the 71st percentile, meaning that it was equal to or better than 71% of all average scores. The average score for Black applicants was in the 35th percentile, a full standard deviation below the average white score. The MCATs have already been redesigned. The MCATs have already been redesigned to try to reduce this gap. So instead of figuring out why there's the gap and saying, hey, look, this is a, we notice this disparity. We notice along racial lines. Let's figure out what's causing that gap. Instead of doing that, they're like, okay, well, let's just change the test to get rid of the gap.
Or even, I mean, okay, so let's hypothetically say, all right, that the structural cultural inequality exists. Let's just say, even though they're not pointing to any specific examples, all of that. So wouldn't it be good to figure out exactly where the problem is and maybe invest in programs that would help to tutor students so that they actually teach them the things that they need to pass their tests?
How about close the gap instead of remove the evidence that the gap exists? That's what changing the test does. You're changing the test to obscure the fact that the gap is there. That's ridiculous. You're not fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. So they say now, since they've changed the MCAT to try and hide this gap, a quarter of the questions now focus on social issues and psychology, have nothing to do with medicine.
Right.
Yet the gap still persists. Look at this. The gap still persists. So medical schools use wildly different standards for admitting Black and white applicants. From 2013 to 2016, only 8% of white college seniors with below average undergraduate GPAs and below average MCAT scores were offered a seat in medical school. Less than 6% of Asian college seniors with those qualifications were offered a seat. According to an analysis by economist Mark Perry, medical schools regarded those below average scores as all but disqualifying, except when presented by Blacks and Hispanics. Over 56% of Black college seniors with below average undergraduate GPAs and below average MCATs, and 31% of Hispanic students with those scores were admitted, making a Black student in that range more than 7 times as likely as a similarly situated white college senior to be admitted to medical school, and more than 9 times as likely to be admitted as a similarly situated Asian senior. This is why the Asian students were suing, have been suing, because there's a lot of discrimination. If you're an Asian kid, and the standards are so much higher that you have to meet to get into one of these schools, because they don't want you, because they feel like they've got their quota. They've got too many Asian kids who are scoring high and they don't want you. Right. And they're judging you solely based on your race.
Right. And also, it's very much so Asian students, I mean, there's the whole stereotypical tiger mom thing, but Asian students, and it's very common in Asian families to have a high standard of excellence, that their parents want them to have a 4.0, and that's what's expected of them. And this often causes a lot of stress to students, but Asian families are most likely to hire tutors for their kids in subjects that they don't do as well in, that there is very much a, if you can work hard to succeed, you will work hard and you will succeed, that it's a very cultural mindset that way, or very commonly a cultural mindset that way. So you have all these Asian students who are succeeding, and the system itself is then not letting them succeed, that it's become unequal. And this reminds me, it was, there's a lot of crossover, but there was in the classical music industry, that there was a Black violinist, and he was a very good violinist, but his teacher ended up quitting the industry entirely, because he would tell his students that, hey, if you practice hard, if you work hard, you can be truly excellent. And he's like, I don't need to practice. I'll be in any symphony. They want me in because there's so few Black violinists. And this teacher, I mean, he loves classical music. That is his job. That was, a large part of his life. He's like, but don't you want to be excellent? You could be so much better than you are. And you're like, well, I can just turn in my work and no one's going to say boo. It's like, I could focus and work hard and almost break myself to get into this college and do the best I can be, be the best I can be, or I can just sort of schluff in and then, people just want me to be there. And that there is, without that high standard of excellence and without that without sincerely wanting to be the best you can and just like, well, I'm here because they want someone here that looks like me. That's not helping science. That's not helping
No.
actual human advancement.
No, and it's not helping all the quote unquote marginalized groups they claim to be helping. I mean, Mystery
Right.
Chris talks about this all the time. It's actually very condescending and racist to say, well, we don't expect you to meet the same standards because you're black. Well, you can't do this, so we're going to lower the standards. That's ridiculous. That's horrible. That's stupid. And it's so insulting to the black students
Right.
who do meet those standards and go well above them and have worked their asses off to be there, and then you're letting in people who aren't even meeting the average score. And then they have to, those kids who are super smart and happen to be black, they have to go through that school and that whole school experience with everyone looking at them, wondering if they're one of the people who was let in because of their race. Just like women who are let in because of their sex, now women in positions who deserve to be there, rightfully so, have to live with that, with people looking at them and saying, are you one of the women who was let in because you're like, this doesn't do any favors for women or people of color. It's incredibly condescending. It's
Yeah, and
incredibly racist and sexist.
it is, and it actually breeds it breeds actual racism and actual inequality, and that you have all these people who are if you keep telling people that the reason that there's this inequality is because of racism or that we're correcting racism, well, then when there is a resentment because that person is being pushed forward and succeeding, and if you, and some people are just resentful because they're resentful and envious, but if you're like, my work is better than their work and they're succeeding and I'm not, and there is that resentment there, that causes real problems and that causes real division, and they're
Yes.
promoting it. They
Yes.
want that.
They want it. This is one of those common sense things where I kind of don't have any words for it because it's sort of the adults are not in the room. The people who are deciding this are not in the room. Don't you want your brain surgeon? Don't you want your airplane pilot to be the best at their job? Isn't that the most important thing? Is that they're skilled, highly skilled in that area? To the fact that it's now moving into these hard sciences in this way that it have real world impact on people's lives, on life or death questions, and we're cool with it. Our culture is cool with it. It's like, yeah, let's just choose people by their race and sex, and not by whether they're the best brain surgeon or the best airline pilot. But what list of marginalized groups are they in? I want to know.
Right. And it's such a fundamental misunderstanding of human nature, which it really, the entire social justice or the whole critical theory that everything is based on power and inequality. And like the lady in New Zealand, wasn't it, who just gave her, it was supposed to be her oath to the Queen, but she said that she changed it up so sovereign became herself, that she was the sovereign. That you find that there's so many, you find it in feminism a lot when they're like, oh, so men have the power, the patriarchy is evil, and I'm going to take the power from the men. Huh. So in these tradition, not to defend Eton or anything, but these traditional old school systems, yeah, those kids, those boys that they turn out could be jerks. But traditionally, there was a talk of, hey, you, if you are the lord of the manor, it is your job to respect everybody and to care for the people under you and to yield this power justly. That you have the power that you have has responsibilities. And of course, power corrupts and you have problems and everything else. So it's not saying that those issues didn't exist, but you have all of these bright young feminists who are like, yeah, so we're going to take the power from the patriarchy and then we're going to take this power and be just as awful. It's
Yes.
like, didn't anyone give you the power talk? Didn't anyone say that you have to, think of others, put them before yourself, servant leadership, the better of the group? It's like the better of the group is that women in charge and we defeat the patriarchy. No,
No, they don't
it's
think
all
past.
about you now.
Yeah, it's not that they have a problem with oppression. It's that the type of personality you're describing is that they want to be the ones oppressing. It's
Right.
not. It's that
The
they want to
problem
make
is that
sure
they're
they're,
not
yeah,
the oppressor.
right. Right. I do know some feminists like that, who it's not that they have a problem with sexism, it's that they want to be the group that has the power to wield
Right.
it, right? Like they feel like women don't have that currently have that power, and they want to make sure that we do, and that it's not that they have a problem with bigotry based on sex. It's just they want it to go in one direction towards men.
Okay. I guess
Okay,
I
I'm
should
gonna.
say not all feminists, but you know that
Yeah,
they
it's true.
do
Not
see
all
that.
feminists. Yeah, I'm gonna read a little more of this because this is part of the concerning part. So we're talking about the admission rates here. Again, anyone just joining, this is in Heather McDonald's article in City Journal about the corruption of medicine. So they're talking about how they're changing the MCATs to try and hide racial disparities, but the disparities are still there. So now, in the admission rates, they're actually they have racist admissions practices. So they're admitting you based not on your scores, but based on what race you are. And then scroll down just a little. Such disparate rates of admission hold in every combination and range of GPA and MCAT scores, contrary to the AMA's organizational strategic plan to embed racial justice and advance health equity. Blacks are not being, quote, excluded from medical training. They are being catapulted ahead of their less valued white and Asian peers. Though mediocre MCAT scores keep out few Black students, some activists seek to eliminate the MCATs entirely. Admitting less qualified students to PhD programs in the life sciences will lower the caliber of future researchers and slow scientific advances. But the stakes are higher in medical training, where insufficient knowledge can endanger a life in the here and now. Nevertheless, some medical schools offer early admissions to college sophomores and juniors with no MCAT requirement at all, hoping to enroll students with, as the Icahn School of Medicine in Mount Sinai puts it, quote, a strong appreciation of human rights and social justice. The University of Pennsylvania Medical School guarantees admission to Black undergraduates whose score is a modest 1300 on the SAT, that if they maintain a 3.6 GPA in college and complete 2 summers of internship at the school waives its MCAT requirement. Waives it entirely for these Black students. UPenn's non-preferred medical students score in the top 1% of all MCAT takers. According to race advocates, differences in MCAT scores must result from test bias. So again, we're going back to this thing where they don't actually use science to figure out where this disparity is coming from. They just say the answer must be racism. We're not going to investigate that or prove that. Yet the MCATs, like all beleaguered standardized tests, are constantly scoured for questions that may presume forms of knowledge particular to a class or a race. This, quote, cultural bias chestnut has been an irrelevancy for decades, yet it retains a salience within the anti-test movement. MCAT questions with the largest racial variance in correct answers are removed. This is the part you're talking about. They take them out entirely. External bias examiners suitably diverse double check the work of the internal MCAT reviewers. If, despite this gauntlet of review, bias still lurked in the MCATs, the tests would underpredict the medical school performance of minority students. In fact, they overpredict it. Black medical students do worse than their MCATs would predict, as measured by step one scores and graduation rates. Nevertheless, expect a growing number of medical schools to forego the MCATs in the hope of shutting down the test entirely and thus eliminating a lingering source of objective data on the allegedly phantom academic skills gap. So there's so
Yeah.
much more to this, guys. I don't know if you can see here on the side how far we've scrolled down. We just barely scratched the surface. I don't have time. We don't want to spend the whole time reading this, but I put the link. I'll put it in the chat again. Please go read this piece. It is alarming. Please share it.
It's a very exhaustive article. And briefly, like I said, I didn't even finish it, but it's like, kind of eye-opening. But also part of it is that so you have medical tests and everything else, but they're taking funding for research, and they're putting it in social justice, that that they want to make a happy and more inclusive lab and not let's do more cancer research.
Oh, well, here. I just happen to be at that part. I'm going to put this back on the screen for a second. Because it's just, some days, and you just get, there's one thing that just, you get a bug in your bonnet about one thing. This is the thing today. It's just this piece. It's really like, I can't believe all of it. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I just think a lot of people in the echo chamber don't aren't aware of this stuff, and they I would
Right.
love to see them justify it. So here's the part you're talking about, Anne. It says funding that once went to scientific research is now being redirected to diversity cultivation. The NIH and the National Science Foundation are diverting billions in taxpayer dollars from trying to cure Alzheimer's disease and lymphoma to fighting white privilege and cis heteronormativity. That's not even, I hate to tell you this, that's a made-up word. That's not even a real word. It's private research
Like,
support. Go ahead.
what do you want to do? It's like you want to help people with Alzheimer's, or do you want to wonder, sit around and be like, hey, why are things so straight up in here?
Yeah. Why are things so cis heteronormativity? Do you know what that means? Anybody who's not familiar with this social justice gobbledygook, that's a word they made up to try and say that because the majority of people are straight, are attracted to the opposite sex, and you know, which is necessary for reproduction, and
Right.
because the majority of
Biological imperative.
biology, imagine we're talking about a medical school here. Why do you think the majority
Right.
of people are straight? I don't know.
Weird.
They're saying because the majority of people are straight, and then they use this made-up word cis to try and differentiate. They try and use this word to normalize talking about trans people as if it's not an aberration, as if it's normal to experience gender dysphoria, which it's not. Historically, yes, there have always been people who've experienced gender dysphoria, and it's always been less than 1% of the population. But they're trying to introduce it as this sort of, this is a normal thing you decide, just like you decide what your favorite color is, right? Like, were you born in the correct body or not? No, most people don't grapple with that. But they've made up this fake words, this word cis. So cis heteronormativity. They're teaching medical students that there's somehow a prejudice that exists in society, that it's not natural for the norm to be straight, to be heterosexual, and it's not natural for the norm to be people who are fine with their body, the body that they're born into. And they're teaching now medical students to try and tear that down, to try and destroy the idea that it's normal to be comfortable with your sex and to be attracted to the opposite sex. That's what that means. That's what they're giving all this money for.
Yeah,
Sorry,
and
Anne, that was a mouthful.
no, that's all right, because I mean it's very much the, well, gender is a social construct. What about all of history? Oh, that's the evil of the patriarchy. What about people in different groups that haven't touched, that do not touch each other, and yet they have kind of normal gender roles as we would think of them in these cultures? It's like, nope, just society.
I want to say goodbye to Amy. You want to read that
Yeah.
one?
She says, gotta go, my lovelies. Y'all hit the like, share, and subscribe and spread the word. Oh, and go check out Anne's super cool interview with me a few months ago on her channel. And yes, because she is, Amy's amazing, but that she has done so much actual activism and advocacy for years, that she is very knowledgeable when it comes to contacting your state's representatives, paying attention to bills, and again, practical solutions.
Would you say that she's a craftivist?
I don't know. Well, probably. Oh, and also, not to mention, if you are crafty, and if you're in the chat, that she is actually doing a craft along with two sisters and some yarn. For Let Them Live, which is a pro-life organization that gives help, often financial help, to expecting mothers. And that, yeah, and they're doing a little, she has a make along, so it's not just knitting, but it's crochet and quilting and the rest of it. And yeah, and every, and whatever you make, you send to her, and every entry that you do, either if you make something or just do a have a financial contribution, if you tell her about it, that yeah, she'll enter you in a giveaway, and they have lots of yarn and fun stuff. So it's on her Instagram too.
What's her Instagram?
Two sisters and some yarn.
Thank you. Thanks,
Sure.
Amy. Take care. Do you want to go through this anymore? Do you want to talk about antique shops? Because this is making me upset. Yeah, we'll just finish this paragraph and then we can move on and you guys can go read this yourself. But yeah, it's a really frustrating. So it's talking about all this money that used to go for Alzheimer's disease and lymphoma now being used to fight white privilege and cis heteronormativity. Private research support is following the same trajectory. The Howard Hughes Medical Institute is one of the world's largest philanthropic funders of basic science and arguably the most prestigious. Airline entrepreneur Howard Hughes created the Institute in 1953 to probe into the genesis of life itself. Now, diversity in medical research is at the top of HHMI's concerns. In May of 2022, it announced a $1.5 billion with a B effort to cultivate scientists committed to running a quote, happy and diverse lab where minoritized scientists will thrive and persist.
Wow.
In the words of the Institute's vice president, experts in diversity and inclusion will assess early career academic scientists based on their plans for running, quote, happy and diverse labs. Those applicants with the most persuasive happy lab plans could receive one
How
of
do they get
many.
stickers on a chart?
I imagine. Do you remember that movie, Office Space? I think it's like you remember the pieces of Flair? I just imagine these happy labs is they're looking at all the potential incoming scientists as pieces of flair. They're like, oh, I need three blacks and two women and a couple of gays. Like, that's how they view people.
Yeah, which is, it's awful. It just, okay, look, I'm an old school conservative, okay? I am Rush Limbaugh, Reagan, pumpkin spice latte, Christian conservative, basic as you can be. And I'm just looking at this like, now we need to go back farther. If my doctor isn't speaking to me in Latin and Greek, he's out. I'm not bored. If we could get the high black collars back in, like somebody had a joke before, like back to medieval medicine, at least just medieval medicine, at least we're trying to get somewhere. They had some excellent goals. I'm not saying that they succeeded, but they made a good try of it. That they were making efforts, and it's on their shoulders that we stand on. So don't diss the medievals, man. They tried.
That's funny. Can you, since that was a bit heavy, and I'll drop the link to that article one more time in the chat if you guys want to go read it, and we'll put it in the description of the video. But since that was kind of heavy, we've got a few more minutes. Do you want to tell us? I'm just curious because you mentioned this early at the beginning that you've always been conservative. What does that mean? Were you raised in a conservative household, or have you always paid attention to politics? Do you mean conservative personally or politically or what?
Well, as I joke about this a lot, that I've always been a big fan of Mark Stein. Blame my mother for that one. But the sort of if you don't live conservatively, you can't really be a conservative. And that's not to push anybody out, but if you're looking at a politician or something and you're like, yeah, you don't really live how you speak. Anyways, but that's not your question. That yes, both my parents were very conservative. Like there was no real like conversion to conservatism. Like I can remember when I was very, very young thinking that, yeah, feminism and animal rights activists and that is cool. And that ended very shortly after paying attention. And by paying attention, I mean in elementary school. So I was very young, very, oh wait, that there are issues here. And even with such issues as the UN, for example, that people are now going like, oh, the UN, they're not good. And I'm like, I was that kid, okay? I was the kid that in elementary school knew, and I don't remember my parents specifically telling me about this. They must have, but knew that members of the quote UN peacekeeping police force were abusing kids in Africa. And I knew this in elementary school, and elementary school would be over what, over 20 years ago. And people are rolling in like, I can't believe that the UN is so evil. I'm like, I know this for ages. And
Wow.
the with it's like there was, I think I was watching a Tim Pool video and they were just very surprised because they're like, oh man, so Democrats are walking in to Republican primary candidate elections and they're voting for the primary candidate that they think would be easiest to win against. And again, I'm sitting here at home going, Operation Chaos. That Operation Chaos in 2008 is when it was Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and they were in the primaries against each other, and everybody knew that Barack Obama was going to win because he was new and he was charming and he didn't have all the Hillary baggage, and a lot of people didn't know how bad he was. I'm like, I was Rush Limbaugh listening. That would be, I was about 14, 15 at the time. Like, I knew what he was. He was a Marxist, but whatever. But that
Yeah,
an operation.
you're awake pretty young.
Yeah,
I
I've
was one of those people like celebrating for Obama in the streets.
Which, you know, we all get there somehow. But yeah, it was my parents very definitely helped me through that. But sorry, Operation Chaos. So Rush Limbaugh was telling people that the only person who would bloody Barack Obama, who would attack him, who would bring up any real attack ads, was Hillary Clinton. So at that point, it was McCain Palin, and thank goodness that McCain is not the level of our options that we have now. But it was locked in. John McCain was going to be the Republican candidate for president. There was pretty much no one to contend with him. So in states when he had open elections, that it was Republicans going in and voting for Hillary Clinton in the primary. To keep her in the race and to keep her attacking Obama because McCain wouldn't either. And that was Operation Chaos. And you would have people calling in on the radio saying, like, yeah, you know, I didn't shower for 2 days and I wore Birkenstocks, so I looked like a hippie going. So they wouldn't question me on actually being a Republican. And they'd make jokes like that and doing this. But yeah, that, you know, it's like, oh, well, this is a new thing. I'm like, no, this has been going on for a while. Like,
Oh, so
there's a
you're
lot of
saying
polls.
that Democrats have also done that in Republican primaries? Is that what you're saying?
That Democrats are doing that now.
Oh,
And
okay.
as far as I know, with, you know, quote, Operation Chaos, that was the first that I heard of anyone doing that en masse.
Oh,
So
that's
yeah,
very
that's an old
cool.
Rush Limbaugh trick pulled out of the
Wow.
bag.
Just want to say hello to Dangerous Rhetoric. These guys just showed up. Their icon always makes me laugh. Hello, guys. So why is that? Why were you so tuned into things at such a young age, do you think?
Like I said, both my parents were very much paid attention to politics. My mom would read Victor Davis Hanson articles all the time. And when actually I worked and I went to a Christian summer camp for years, and my mother would actually send me Mark Steyn articles, which I was always very excited for, and I was definitely the weird kid at the table. But no, and it's something that caught my interest too. And yeah, and I was, I guess, partially homeschooled for a couple of years through high school as well. So it was very common. Rush Limbaugh played, I listened, and it's like, oh, well, brainwashed. It's like, no, there were things I, and not very many things I disagreed with Rush on, except for his love of iPhones and his unabashed trust in the medical industry. But that was one of the things too that's like, oh, well, you're just a brain dead robot. It's like, no, Rush genuinely cared about people, and the quality of his programming is not something that's been matched
Well,
since.
I wouldn't know because my dad listened to him and I rebelled very hard and, as you know, became super thoroughly woke. I didn't read any of Rush Limbaugh's books, but I read Al Franken's book, Rush Limbaugh's a Big Fat Idiot.
Oh, of course.
And of course, as you
I
do in your cult,
bought one of those the other day. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I still have mine.
Oh.
Yeah.
You
But
know what I
I
said about how awful it is to destroy old books?
He's one of those guys that I just haven't had time to go back and see what I really think about him. I never formed an opinion about him when he was living, and I mean, I did, but it wasn't my own opinion. I had the opinion that my tribe had. And so there's so many other people who are still around and stuff that I want to figure out what I think about them now that I just haven't had time to go see what I think about him. But your opinion means a lot to me, so I should look into
Well,
him.
and another thing that was really great about Rush, I mean, first off, he was very concise, that he was very, but he was very, he would cut straight to the point, and that is something very rare in commentary. And also, but also he was very much of a, you go out and you do the best you can, that he was very optimistic all the time. Even I remember right after, again, once Obama was elected, that he gets on the radio and everyone listening is depressed, though not sobbing as openly on my part at least, than later when Trump was elected and the liberals took it kind of hard. But I remember him at the beginning of the program saying, "All right, you have 15 minutes. You have 15 minutes to be miserable about this. Go ahead, take it out, be as depressed as you want to be. But after that, you got to pick up and work." That's like, you can, go for it, be as depressed as you want. 15 minutes, and we're back on it. And that was the Tea Party, and that was everything else that happened throughout that time. And I mean, as even now, with as miserable as things are under Biden, that you do see a lot of shift and a lot of like, is it all going to crash and burn, or are we going to pull through? Neither of those options matter. The options are, what are we going to do, and are we going to fail? Well, it's going to be much better if we do something. There's nothing like trying for getting something done. But yeah,
I
there's
have
a
a
lot of.
question for you from the chat from Neil from Block Magazine. He says, Anne often knows more about British politics than Brits do. I think she's an Anglophile. What inspired that?
Oh, well, you can blame my parents for that one too. I mean, also that, I don't know, I had a lot of interest in international news. I mean, at the same time as a teenager, like I mean, I always loved the old 1800s books, Jane Austen and Dickens and the rest of them, all the murder mysteries, and I would read them. But yeah, and then when I was a teenager too, I would, again, homeschooled at the time. What else am I going to do but look at the Daily Mail? And again, at the time it was Obamacare. So I learned about the NHS. The NHS sucks. Man, it's bad. Y'all need to fix that, because it is very much with Obamacare. If the state owns your body, they own you. And even then, there was a, it was Archie. I don't remember his last name, but every once in a while, there is a story out of England about a kid who is brain dead or got into an accident, and the NHS pulls the plug and they die. And they're not allowed to leave, and they're not allowed to appeal. And this happens all the time. And again, old stuff.
They're not allowed to come to the States to try and get
Right.
treatment.
But old stuff with, McCain and Palin saying if there's Obamacare, there'll be death panels. Oh no, that won't happen. Yeah, what do you think that is? And yeah, that it's awful things. So, but yeah, so yes, interest in British news. And again, the Mark Stein thing. He's on GB News now, but he used to guest host occasionally for Rush Limbaugh, and those were always my favorite days because he's Canadian, but he was schooled in England and kind of the international news that I like. I like how that these events and these problems and these political issues we have, that they not only echo, it's not just an American thing. And while every country is sovereign, that they echo back and forth from each other, that this problem has an echoing problem in France, which has an echoing problem in Australia, which has an echoing problem actually back in the 1800s. And that you can kind of see these ideas and these opinions and how they're all interconnected. And even though we have separate systems, we have separate governments, that they kind of set precedents for each other, that the Canadian truckers have nothing to do with the Dutch farmers from a top-down political angle, but they're both pushing back on what is for now a global problem that they're that with COVID we got. I mean, for a little, to a certain extent, we do have a level of global governance when it comes to UN and I mean, the World Economic Forum isn't a governance, but it is a governance in the way that it acts and behaves throughout societies. And if everyone's taking their orders from the same place, that's a level of governance, whether it's an official government or whether it's an organization or if it's the Coca-Cola company, any corporation, that if you have everyone obeying same things, fellow travelers, whatever. Anyways, but that you do have this level of global action when people all over are obeying the same thing. But if the Canadian truckers are strong and they're pushing back, even though they get bloodied for it, if the Dutch farmers are strong and they're pushing back, if there are protesters in France about their government, if there's protesters in Sri Lanka, that all these people are, they're not even necessarily pushing for the same thing politically, but they're kind of they're giving courage to each other to a certain extent. Hey, I can stand up and push the line. You can stand up and push the line. Hey, we're going to fight back too because we don't believe in this either. Hey, if somebody doesn't do something, the government is going to come in and take all of our land and we need to protest. So it is very much a, I don't know, I find it encouraging.
You have an ability to, I think it, what it is, do you remember those back when people would go to malls, which we don't do anymore, but do you remember those
I went
things
to
that were,
Romania while this past week. It was very exciting, but
nice.
please go on.
Do you remember those things that were popular for a while, the dot artwork where you had to stare at it for a while until you could see what it was? Like when you just looked at it on the surface, it was just a bunch of colored dots, and then you would stare at it and something would come out of the dot, like, oh, I see it. It's a dog or whatever. Do you remember those? I'm a little bit older than you. These were really popular for a while. Anybody in the
Not
chat
those
remember these?
specifically, but
So it was like this kind of artwork where they would do different colors and different dots. Magic eye. Yes, thank you, magic eye. And you would have to look at it the right way and that for to be
okay.
able to see what it was. You're one of those people who can see what it is. When you look at the big picture, you have a big picture worldview, not just you're not just looking at dots, like you can see where how everything connects. And I think what I've started to realize is that maybe most people just see the dots. They can't see what the picture is. Like they don't look at things and connect them, and they're not even able to connect them to history and to say, well, we've seen this before. This is a pattern. Like you're saying, there's a pattern. There's the stuff that the Dutch farmers are doing is related to what the Canadian truckers are doing. And of course it is. Of course it is, but I think some people can't see that. They're like, oh, those are two different dots. I don't know what this picture is. Well, it's a pretty scary picture. So maybe it's ignorance is
It
bliss.
is. Well, and that's one of, and again, to reference back to Obama, but I'm like, oh, great, the Obama era is back again. This sucks. But that's one of the things too, like, oh, wow, it looks really scary out there. And with the thing with the IRS right now, it's like, oh, wow, the IRS has got more power. And I'm just like, oh, with the IRS attacking the Tea Party back in the day, this is going to happen again. It's going to be worse. It's like, it's sort of the, oh, this again. Not that this has really, truly stopped, but also this again.
BS says we can see them, but we're called conspiracy theorists. Yeah, we are. And then you know what happens though, BS, is then later that when everybody can see it afterwards, they're like, hey, that was a dog. And you're like, yeah, remember when you imprisoned us for saying that? Or like, that's how it goes throughout history. Remember when you
Right.
kicked us offline for saying that it was a dog? And they're like, oh, we couldn't tell before. No, some of us could. Some of us could tell. It's like that with the Wuhan lab stuff now, where the lab came, they're like, oh, it looks like maybe COVID came from a lab. Like, yeah, remember when you were banning
Yeah.
people for saying that?
Crazy. Never
Okay.
forget.
Never forget. And I want to have you back. I want to have you back with your partner in crime, deplorable knitter. And I hope you have great travels in Romania. Thank you for hanging out with us today. and talking about the world, and just tell people one more time where they can find you online if they want to hang out with you and a deplorable knitter. Where can they do that?
Sure. The biggest place is our YouTube channel, Politically Incorrect Knitters. We are also on Rumble, which is, I don't know, Rumble is fun. We don't get a lot of connection on Rumble, except for the one time we were banned off YouTube, but we are there for that reason. It was temporary, or the video was taken down, whatever. Anyways, we are also on Instagram. Instagram would probably be our biggest social media platforms, not under Politically Incorrect Knitters, as Anne Pankova and also Deplorable Knitter. We're also both on Twitter, which is kind of recent for me.
Yay, you joined the Twitter.
Join the Twitter. But yeah, there is, again, Anne Pinkova, Deplorable Knitter, Twitter, Getter. I think we're on MeWe. We haven't really checked those.
All the places. Like, yeah. Politically Incorrect Knitters. And look, Darian Murphy in the chat says, this interview's great. I've never subbed to a knitter before, but I just subbed to Anne.
Aw, cool. Thanks.
Anne Pinkova. I'm kidding. Say it the right way. How do you say it the right way?
No, Pinkova is right. Like the color. Pinkova. Oh.
Okay. And Pinkava. I'm sorry. I had to do it the wrong way.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Anne. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Again, you've been watching a live Graffiti Break on Deprogram with Carrie Smith. Pirate just dropped all the links for our show in the chat. And if you like the show and want to subscribe financially, you can do so at local subscribe store or Patreon. You can also get on Facebook and join the book club. And or in locals, we'll be posting there as well about the upcoming book. But had fun hanging out with you guys on a Monday. I hope you have a great week, and we'll see you on Wednesday for pop culture.
All right, see you then.
Bye. Take care.
Bye.